Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
David Waters here from Gators Breakdown, and at it again with Uncle Silk, Corey Knowles from the Big Three Roll Up with another edition of the Gator Panel. Silk, we're putting this together again for Gator Nation with our good friends here. Gator Nation's excited. Everything's moving in a positive direction for the Gators, and it's been a while we can say that about Florida, to go along here with all the enthusiasm around the Gators right now.
Yeah, man, everything's looking beautiful, man. Back with the Gator Panel. Got some new faces on here with Amar Black. A couple guys dropped out last minute, but we're going to get it rolling. Got some imitators out there. Got some people trying to do what we do. You know what I'm saying? So let's get the original jumping off real quick.
There we go. There we go. So here we go. Introductions. Get it started right here. Amar Black, let's start with you.
What's going on? Amar Black, Gator safety, 07 to 10, national champion, baby.
Take Casey. Oh, I think he's on mute.
Tate's muted. Forgot about that. Sorry about that, boy. Tate Casey, 04 to 08, two-time national champion.
Oh, hit him with the tape. Hit him with the tape.
Had to one-up you, man. Sorry about that.
My bad, Tate.
Nick De La Torre.
Nick De La Torre, Gator Country, no-time national champion.
Thomas.
Thomas Goldkamp, 24/7 Sports. I don't really have anything cool to say, but let's get this thing rolling.
Graham Hall.
Graham Hall, the Gainesville Sun. Just honored to be back here.
Oh, my God, that background, bro.
It's back.
I feel like I want to, like, do some voodoo or something.
Just chilling vibe and look at it, man.
I feel like I'm on Aladdin or something, all right?
Take a ride, baby.
Man, we were talking about – Graham, we were talking about bourbon beforehand, and I forgot to pour one, so –
Likewise.
No, bro. Here we go. Zach Albaverde is covering softball tonight. And then Ben Troop may or may not get in here. He has a speaking engagement tonight. So if he jumps in, okay. If not, we'll keep it rolling here. But guys, recruiting kind of talk right now. We'll go do some broad strokes and get more particular later on in the episode. But, you know, from the slow start for the 2019 class, the California experiment, cookouts, a 10-win season, Miami and FSU kind of faltering during the season, coaching changes. When it was all said and done, the Gators finished with a top 10 class. You know, most of us discussed recruiting right before the season, and we really had no idea where it was going to go on one of the panel episodes we did there. So, you know, there was no way to kind of, you know, forecast that the Gators to get a 10-win season at the same time Florida State and Miami struggle along the way. All that put together helped propel the finish to this class with some top talent. A talent influx for the second year in a row under Mullen. The staff went after top targets, not afraid to, and landed a good bit of them. Silk, man, this class was a heck of an exclamation point dating all the way back to the start of the season.
Yeah, it started off slow. It was a slow start to the recruiting season, but, I mean, once the end of the summer, things started picking up. We got some wins. We kind of knew we was going to have to show something on the field, some offense was to get this thing turned as a program, and Mullen start getting it rolling. Overall, the class is pretty good. We missed that defensive tackle, strong side defensive end, but other than that, we hit on pretty much all of our needs, man.
Wants to jump in next?
Yeah, I think everyone's going to obviously point out that defensive tackle spot, which certainly was, you know, lessened by them getting John Greenard from Louisville, and then obviously the guys on the roster. You're talking about several defensive tackles coming back, and Adam Schuler and Kyrie Campbell, who have another year in Gainesville. And as long as they address that position next year and prioritize it, I think that there will be no issue with the defensive tackle spot. And otherwise, you look around and you look at the needs they addressed. I mean, that getting in seven offensive linemen, knowing you're losing four starters, that's something that separates the elite programs from the pretenders. I mean, I think that we can all agree that Will Muschamp not getting a lot of offensive linemen was one of certain of things that led to his undoing as well. And Florida addressing all their needs is pretty big in Mullen's first year, I would say.
Well, yeah. Not just not getting enough, but he would get kids getting kicked off the team right away, kids getting injuries. The offensive line, the numbers weren't there. And then the kids that did make it to campus weren't on campus for very long for Muschamp.
Yeah, I'm glad that, you know, of course, I'm going to say we got a lot of DBs in there. I'm so happy to see the talent. I'm so excited to see the talent that we got back there. The offensive line as well. You know, we got some guys that could potentially step up and be big for us this year. You know, our offensive line is the front runner of our offense, basically. And that's what's going to, you know, tell us what our quarterback's going to do is how well the offensive line does.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback that. I mean, we talked a lot in the offseason about offensive line and Coach Hevesy coming in and actually being able to influence those guys and propel them a little bit. And now what you're looking at is like guys like Jawan Taylor really stepping up this year, going on to be possibly a first, you know, top 10 pick, first round draft pick this year, with Martez Ivy, a couple of those guys who, you know, Tyler Jordan and those guys really stepping up. He's going to have young guys to deal with this next offseason and the winter workouts as he goes into spring, goes into 2-a-days. He's also going to have a lot of guys coming in this class. That's a big deal. I also think you probably keep an eye on some of these, you know, outside linebackers that we signed that may bump into that DN rush in slot and bump possibly some of those DNs inside where you've got athletic big bodies, you know, not necessarily your typical 6'4", 295-pound defensive tackles, but guys that can move and still occupy space and be athletic in the middle. So, I mean, I think we'll be fine. I obviously understand there's a lot of concern around the defensive tackle position right now, but you also got to remember these guys are getting another season under Nick Savage under their belt right now. They got a lot of upside going into this offseason, and there's a lot of moving pieces that I still have yet to settle. And I think we'll see more of that as we get around to summer and 2-a-days.
Yeah, one thing I would add to that, I think when you look at what Dan Mullen's done with his roster in the first 2 years, he's done a really good job of aggressively targeting some spots that he thinks were needs. You know, I look back at receiver a year ago, and, you know, he's able to come in and land two stud transfers, guys that obviously played a huge role right away. I think Mullen's shown that he's pretty nimble in the transfer market, so that's maybe a way you can shore up defensive tackle moving down the road. Same thing with JUCO players. You know, Mullen has a history of kind of bringing in some of those JUCO players, particularly in the trenches. So I don't worry about that a whole lot. I think just generally looking at it, you look at the quality of the upgrades that he's made. You know, Florida's turning over some three-star talent with four-star players. And at the end of the day, you get enough of those guys, that's when you start to have guys that emerge out of that group and really start to be big-time playmakers. And I think you look at this class, and I think there's a whole lot of those guys in it.
Thomas, I want to go back to an article that you just had I saw because we really hit on it on Gators Breakdown is the versatility of a lot of these guys that they brought in. You know, you go back to last class and Amari Burney and what we saw him do towards the end of the season, and then now Diabate and Summerall and Black and those guys that they're bringing in. That's kind of where I think, you know, we don't know. We'll maybe get into it later on what happens with Todd Grantham here on down the road. But, you know, for what we know about his defense and the talent that they brought in this class, I think versatility is probably the biggest thing and the biggest key that I like.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, you know, and Tate kind of hit on it. You don't know how some of these guys are going to grow out. You know, you may have some of these rush end types that get into a college strength program. All of a sudden they're adding 40 pounds and they're guys that can play inside at 3-tech for you. I think there's a lot to like about this class. Obviously, there are some things that, you know, probably could have been done a little bit better. It was a slow start, all that. But I think at the end of the day, Dan Mullen knows what he wants. And look, he's not beating around the bush either. He came out and said it on National Signing Day. Yeah, we got to really shore up defensive tackle going forward. And I think you're going to see them do that pretty aggressively.
Anybody else want to jump in there?
Yeah, I also think with the flexibility you guys are speaking about, I think even with DeJuan Black, I think he can play safety as well, some strong safety or some star, also linebacker. So you got a lot of flexibility. And I think the linebacker group, shout out to C-Rob, he did an amazing job with what he brought in. I think the talent at linebacker that Randy Shannon, those guys left wasn't, they were okay. That's what I'm going to say. I like Mojo for what he brings to the table, but the elite talent at linebacker. And I think we got some athletes that Grantham and Mullen really want, some SEC style guys.
Well, what you got to understand too, also, man, the game is getting faster. You know, we got safeties moving the linebacker. We got linebackers moving it outside on the defensive end, you know, outside guys moving the inside. You know, the game is getting faster, man, and now we got to put guys on the field that can compete with those hybrid tight ends and those guys that can play tight end and then split out wide to wide receiver.
You're not even looking at a guy like DeJuan and saying, hey, he's a safety or a linebacker. You're looking at him, I think, on a week to week matchup, and when you're playing a team like Georgia, hey, who's covering Nada? It's not necessarily a position. It's, hey, this guy matches up physically. He's big enough to handle him if he's up against the line, fast enough to, you know, keep up with him. I think that's what you're looking for, more so than just, hey, what position does he play? It's, hey, who can he cover? Because like Ahmad said, the game is changing so much. And you've got, you know, 6 foot four guys, 250 pounds running 4.4s.
I'm still trying to figure out who's covering Nada.
I'm glad he's gone. Have we covered him yet?
the cat was balling, but I do agree. The game is getting faster. You start seeing some of these hybrid tight ends and some of these big body wide receivers, and you like to go and grab those guys every chance you can for your offense. But when you're playing against them, that matchup obviously is something you've got to take care of. And the question becomes, do you put the smaller body DB who can grow a pair of man up on somebody like that, or do you go out and find a guy that's a little bit bigger body that you can match up one-on-one, or at least get some relief on your back end, you know, whether that's redirection or routes, et cetera. You know, Ma, you've seen it, you know, when you go up against some of these big body tight ends, or you got to go up against these long rangy guys that sneak up on you a little bit. They don't look like much, but man, when they get out in open field and start running, and a lot of them that run good routes, they can be something to handle.
Yeah. I used to guard Tate all the time, so I know.
One of the things I think we are missing from this class, I think offensively, like every class, we got to start getting those transcendent type of playmakers. We got some talent, but I think we need transcendent type of guys. I think this next class, Mullen can land a quarterback and some other players that could be those type of guys, like the Dalvin Cook type players and the Jameis Winstons and even the Tebows and Percy Harvins. You need those type of guys. We got some talent, but we need some difference makers that change the whole program.
You know, I agree with that, but I got a feeling that Dan's looking at what he's got in the bag right now that's already on campus to try and see where he can shuffle some of these pieces around. I really think that, you know, Emory, the unknown right now at quarterback, and you look at some of the offensive types that you've got some running backs and some receivers that could possibly be that shifty type. And I'm not saying he's not going to go out and find the guys you're talking about, but I think he definitely wants to see who's going to kind of transcend or turn into that P position or that Percy Harvin position that he can put in the backfield. He can run him in motion for wide receiver to the backfield, run those shovel option routes, you know, et cetera, and really see who's that puzzle piece that he can fit almost anywhere in a skill position. And right now he's probably got maybe two, maybe one really that he can, like right now. I say he's kind of waiting to see if Damian Pierce is going to be a guy that he can do that with, but I don't know if he's reliable with hands. He's got
Kadarius Toney.
He's got Kadarius Toney, who I really think that is his guy. I honestly think
he needs to learn the route tree, man.
And I agree with
he's
that.
He's on the field. He tips your hand.
I agree with that, but he's also a young guy. So we got to remember how much, you know, with a first-year head coach, you're trying to install, you're trying to get these guys to pound in and understand defenses. The biggest thing for him is off-season, right? Get his work in, put that work in the off-season, get your head in the playbook, run those routes, get your timing down with the quarterbacks. And the biggest thing for him is he better be in tune with every single bit of the off-season program, every single bit of the winter workouts, every single bit of spring ball.
He's got to learn every receiver.
Exactly. And you got to come back around. And when you're in that position, you cannot be somebody who's not trusted, especially by the head coach. And that's a guy who's offensive-minded. He's come from a coordinator spot. So his biggest thing is, do you care and do I trust you? And if Dan Mullen can look at Kadarius Toney and go, I trust him enough to put the ball in his hands 40% of the game, I think he could easily be that playmaker. The question is, how fast can he grow up this offseason and show that he's turned a corner and he can be that guy?
I mean, fans were going crazy at the beginning of the year. Why is Kadarius Toney touching the ball two times a game? And that's exactly what you said there. He didn't trust him to do other than what you saw him do, which was, you know, catch that screen pass. And he didn't trust him to run routes and to do the other things. And you saw as the season went on, that trust build, he starts getting the ball in his hands more. But that's at some point, that's on the player. It's not on the coach. You have to show the coach.
Absolutely. Now, if he gets into sophomore, junior year, and we're still seeing that where he's not getting the ball that much, even though he's dynamic and he's got that ability, that big playmaking ability, then I think you kind of look and say it's something behind the scenes, whether it's practice, whether it's class, whether it's off-season program. He's just not one of those guys that's to, you know, turn it over. But I, like I said, he's still young. He's still got a lot of ball left to play in him. And it's really going to be about how he approaches the offseason program, how he approaches, you know, the film sessions and everything else that goes into being a D1 football player. How serious is he taking it? And if he's one of those guys who's in the film room at 5:30 every morning and he's out the door going to tutor at 7 o'clock every night and he's always on time and he's grinding and he's doing what he needs to do, he'll be that guy. There's no doubt. I think he'll be one of those guys in a heartbeat. His question is, that's on him. he's got to be able for the next year, 2 years to really turn that corner. I think he can be if he does that.
I definitely agree, Tate, man, and that's what it that's what differentiates these guys is how serious do you want to be and how serious do you take your craft and do you really want to take your game to the next level? And that's what it is. It's getting in the weight room, learning your playbook. I mean, because ultimately, the more you do, the longer you can stay. And I'm a firm believer of that. And I feel like Kadarius brings a lot to the table, and he definitely can help the Gators out a little bit better than he did last year, this year coming up.
Yeah, Tony's problem is definitely not ability. He's fast. Everybody wants the ball in his hand. He's electric. But like the words you said, craft. He got to learn the craft of being a receiver. He got to take time out to learn the nuances of running routes, setting up routes, to hone his skills, to go to the next level too, not just with college football and now and getting on the field now. But if he wants to make some money in it and as with this game as a profession, he needs to learn the skills of the wide receiver position. I think he's just an athlete right now. If you get the ball in his hands, he can make things happen.
Well, the biggest thing I think at this, when we're talking about the class, I mean, you got RJ Henderson, you got a guy who's going to come in and be a dynamic playmaker at wide receiver, plus you have some guys back from last year. When you go into that and you talk of the defensive side of the ball mixed with the offensive line, we got some good pickups. I mean, we got some great pickups. I think Dan did exactly what he needed to do to close the year out in the recruiting process. And the last time we all got together, that was the question, right? How are we gonna close? Yeah. You know, is he gonna be able to close Elam? Was he gonna be able to close some of these big hitters? And then of course you pick up RJ Henderson, who wasn't necessarily expected. And that's just kind of icing on the cake. And when you turn a corner in the next season, that's exactly the exclamation point he needs to go into the offseason program. So I'm excited about what they got on campus already. I'm even more excited about 2-a-days after everybody shows up.
Well, that's two straight years for Mullen closing strong too. And I think the one thing that stood out to me about the program he's run so far is they always seem to have momentum, man. It's like no matter what, whenever something, you know, goes slightly wrong, they manage to pull something out, like a good finish on National Signing Day. And RJ Henderson, to me, that's pretty impressive. That's something that I think Urban was a master at. And I think, obviously, Dan picked up some of that from his time in Florida, too.
Yeah, and people have made this point, you know, a lot. You can make it about Malik Langham and Chris Bogle and stealing guys away from Nick Saban. But Thomas and Nick, you guys have heard Dan Mullen say this several times, that they rank some of these guys differently than the services do. And there's some guys in this class that for various reasons or 3 stars, 4 stars, didn't rise up. Naquan Wright, Jamarcus Weston, a few that come to mind for certain reasons that they think are absolute steals. So you have a perfect kind of mix of guys that services rate highly, and then guys that, you know, a guy like Weston who stuck in this program for 18 months, committed to the previous staff. That's huge, I think, for Florida, getting that perfect mix of guys and still finishing with that top 10 class, which everyone is going to really look back and when they rank the class and look at that ranking rather than how the guys turned out in the program, unfortunately.
Yeah, because that was, and going back, it was a heck of a finish. You know, 7 of the top 10 players in the class came from closing, from early signing day to national signing day. 7 of the top 10 players committed and signed were in that period. So, you know, much was made of the slow start and you know, even quick summarizations that this staff can't recruit, which was, you know, inexcusable at the time, way too early to say that. You know, I always had the mindset that, you know, we could assess at the time, and we all did an episode on that together, but it was with the notion that, you know, things would change and get better. But the question was, how much better and how would they close? We know, well, when it came down to it, you know, that was the difference in the class. Go back to early signing period and the Lakeland trio getting their announcements on ESPN, them picking Florida, put Florida in the spotlight for that day. And then Florida was rightfully, you know, being discussed as a big winner of the early signing period. Then comes National Signing Day and it comes around. And then that day starts very early with Bogle flipping from Alabama to Florida. And there was Dan Mullen and Florida again in the spotlight, you know, in the headlines of signing day and early signing period. You know, it was all because how the Gators closed and finished those 2 days.
Yeah, I think part of that could be just the way the process unfolds too. You know, a lot of the more elite guys tend to wait a little bit longer. I'd be curious, you know, hearing from Ahmad and Tate, the one thing that a lot of people have pointed to with Mullen so far is the lack of really elite kind of 5-star type prospects. Florida, I think right now is going to go into next season not having a 5-star on the roster. I mean, is there something that programs or coaches have to do different to attract those type of players? Or is that just kind of an organic process that you think will happen the more, you know, Dan starts to put some results on the field?
I think it's more of what he's going to put on the field. I mean, Tate, you can kind of vouch for me. It's not too many five stars that I've seen around the time we played that came in and actually made a huge impact.
Right.
You know, I feel like the star stuff is kind of overrated to me at some point.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, we all got to get out there and play, regardless of how many stars you are. So I just feel like, you know, the star thing and whatever, you know, because what was P. Ryan? Maybe a three-star. You know, I can go down the line and name a couple guys that has made huge impacts that weren't five-star. I mean, there's a lot of guys on our team now.
I'd say this. I mean, what it really boils down to, it depends on the coaching staff. It depends on, you know, what they believe in terms of the ratings and everything else. I can tell you that, and I can really speak for a guy like Billy Gonzalez, John Hevesy, guys that I was around that coached, you know, when I was there, Mullins of the world, they look at it as, I'm going to turn the film on. I'm going to see the intangibles. I'm going to see what I see and what I can coach up really well, what needs to be developed, what the strengths and weaknesses are. And then I'm also going to go talk to his high school coaching staff, see what his strengths and weaknesses are off the field. I'm going to go talk to the lunch lady at the cafeteria and figure out what kind of guy he is. Those are like the small things that nobody really considers and factors into the recruiting process. But when I was getting recruited out of high school, Larry Fedora went and talked to like five people that worked at the high school, my English teacher, like the principal, was talking to like the janitor, random people that like just to get a feel for what kind of person that I was. And those are like the small things that you can't, you know, in recruiting, you look at a website, it's posted. That stuff just got big when I was in high school. And the way they used to do it was they used to call you and say, hey, if your dad buys a subscription, we'll bump you up a star type deal. And I see Thomas smiling because he knows that's how it used to work. And it was funny because they would call the house as much as recruiters would. And that's kind of how it started out. And it wasn't really that big until I got to campus and like literally 2004, you had like frat guys at the bar rattling off your high school stats. Like it was something really great. And I can tell you right now, my high school stats weren't great, but there were a couple of people in Florida that thought they were pretty legit. So it's just one of those things. It depends on how you recruit, how you coach has a lot to do with it, what your scheme is, you know, for that position, that player. And I don't think Dan Mullen's got a shred of doubt that he can turn a three-star into a five-star player. It's just a matter of what his strengths, what his weaknesses are, and then you go from there, what kind of person he is.
Yeah, and give
me 1 second, Black. I mean, I'm not a stargazer. I don't like getting into all the star stuff, but there is a difference when you see some of those five-star guys are making huge differences. There's a big difference. I think it's a gap when you see some of the playmakers that you get with five stars, and they make a difference in the program.
No, I'm not going to disagree with that. But I would say that at times there have been five stars that literally they get to, it depends on what high school they come from. At high school, it depends on what they play against. It depends on where they're coming from.
And all that matters too with landing them too. Like it's just a stroke of luck sometimes. If you get some five star kids that's at a Gator
camps, and man, you go. Some people go to some camps, man, and certain camps, and you know, it's certain people. Sometimes it's who you know with a lot of these things too. Because you're not going to tell me some of the players I've seen, you know, come out and don't be five star, but then I look at somebody else that's five star, and it's like, wait a minute, who's greatness? I kind of, to piggyback off of a take, with Mullen bringing in a certain type of guys. And I see now that they're bringing the guys back that are kind of like family oriented, who want to be there. And the guys who are different from what they're recruiting kind of weeding themselves out. And they kind of transfer or, you know, this may happen, this may happen. I'm liking the type of guys that Coach Mullen and the gang are bringing in, man, because those are good people. We know they can play football. We know that. Everybody know they can play football. But what type of person are you? You know, and that could take you a long way, man.
I mean, hey, there's some examples of that. I mean, just look at the surface. You just said that, and I haven't really put it together. Look at the off-field issues that just haven't really necessarily been there since Mullen's got around. There's just we're not following that anymore.
Right? Yeah.
It's a nice change of pace.
That's a weird thing with the tape bang and the pot. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nonsense over something, but other than that, it's been quiet, man. It's been weirdly quiet in Gainesville, and I like it.
Hey, you gotta talk about that now, so I gotta go on Gainesville mugshots tomorrow morning. Thanks
for being here. It's been quiet.
Hey, I'm not even gonna lie, like I have a little brother say, man, I see Miami dancing all on the videos in the locker room. I say, man, Yeah, Savage getting it out of them, so they ain't got time to dance. Yeah. We get done working out. We tired, man. We don't got time to do all that, man. Just go home.
Ain't got time to tweet. Ain't got time to Instagram. Ain't none of that.
Ain't got time for all that. We just got to go work out. I like it. Home.
That's like that Mick Marotti workout. You didn't have time to crawl to the trash can.
Yeah, they can leave a tweet to me. I got the tweet, fellas. Y'all
I got I'm holding it down. I'm going to hold it down.
I got it.
Hey, yeah. So you seen how I hadn't been that active. I haven't been that active on Twitter in the off season. Like, I leave it up to the professionals.
Hey, look, I follow suit lead, man.
Hey, right, guys, let's get you some trouble some nights, man.
Since we got the right people on here, let's move to one of the biggest storylines of this cycle. And Ahmad can really speak to this, and it's reestablishing the pipeline to Lakeland. That was the trio of Lloyd Summerall, Keon Zipperer, Diave Hammond signed with the Gators. DeMarcus Bowman is high on the list for 2020. Ahmad, you know it better than any of us, but getting back into Lakeland, it was a must in this class, and Mullen came in and got it done.
Oh, man, it was big. And, like, I never heard so many Gator fans back in Lakeland since 2007, all right? It's going crazy down there. Everybody just want to be part of Gator Nation right now. And not just because they're bandwagoning, but, it's these kids that we brought in have such a huge impact on the city, on the other kids. Just looking up to them playing football, man, and them coming back to Florida doing what we did, man, it's huge down there. And a lot of people are buying into it, man. I can't wait. I'm so excited to see these guys in the Gator uniform.
Ahmad, was there any doubt at any point in time that them guys wouldn't come in the UF in your mind?
Oh, man. I wouldn't say, they were saying Miami at one point, but I'm telling you, every single chance I got, hey, listen, I'm not saying Miami's a bad choice, but let me tell you why we're better. And, I just try to let them, explain to them that, man, this is not a four-year decision. This is a lifetime decision. I don't know, 10 years since I suited up in the Gator uniform? And still to this day, people say, hey, man, I remember this play and I was at this, this spot when you made that interception. And, it's just so cool to just, people will always carry that with you. And, like I said, man, I just recently graduated. I have that piece of paper that I can always say I'm part of the University of Florida, man. And that's a top 10 public school, man. And not too many people get to say that, man. That's an awesome opportunity to have.
Yeah, man. And I second that. I think that, for guys like Lakeland Pipeline, obviously, back when we were playing, you had Paul Wilson. We had everybody like besides Ahmad, Paul, Rainey, Pouncy Twins. I mean, I necessarily didn't like any of them, but for the most part, they were pretty good players. But no, I was just kidding. And they like great guys, great players, and Lakeland's obviously known for producing those caliber players that go on and do great things. And we were lucky enough to have five, six of them on one squad. So that's a big deal. I mean, I think obviously I'm a little bit biased, but out of that group, Keon Zipper is going to be, for what we have in a tight end room, as much as I've harped this year on, that's the most depth, biggest tight end room we've had in a while. You're going to have about three or four playmakers in that tight end room. Really three of them that got great hands and athletic and speed that can, do some damage yards after catch. It's going to be a good thing to see. And then when you add Summerall and Diave Hammond, I mean, it's going to be pretty sweet.
Yeah,
no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. I'm so excited to see these guys and ever since, these guys have Florida in their mentions, like I said, man, everybody in the city just kind of like flocked around them, no disrespect to, Florida State, Miami. I think everybody wanted them to be kind of like a sequel to the Lakeland seven that we had.
Yeah, and I also want to
– that's how Dan Mullen sold it. I mean, really, though, I mean, he was telling those guys, hey, come do what Ahmad did and, those other Lakeland 7 back in the day. And, I mean, I don't – maybe Nick can tell you whether or not that could happen. But, I think it's a pretty smart idea.
I got nothing for this entire segment. I'm waiting for the next one.
I need some SCA talk, man, liven them up a little bit.
Hey, man, we went to the state championship. Before I even got there, we had already we scored like twice. Yeah, I don't even think y'all crossed the 50 by the time I got there. Like it was crazy this year.
Did he cut out anything else? I can't hear him, Ahmad.
The only offense you guys had was go five wide, spread everybody out, a quarterback draw. All right. That's all.
Wes Carroll. He was at Mississippi State.
You guys recruit the whole country. We can't be losing the small local teams like
we've been recruiting at St. Thomas.
Hey, do y'all even want to talk high school football?
No.
Hey, listen.
A little bit.
Let's bring Texas into this conversation. Let's talk about attendance ratings at the state high school football championships this year.
Texas.
Google it. Google it.
All right, Graham, you had something with this?
Well, I'm curious for Ahmad and Tate's take. I mean, you bring up the Lakeland guys and how close, I guess, in some people's eyes it was between Florida and Miami. You have so many, you know, avenues of getting out of that letter intent now. You know, if they were to have signed with Miami in the early signing period, you can call up that lawyer in Kentucky now and have him get you out of that letter of intent. You saw something with, what, Brew McCoy at USC going to Texas after the early signing period. How crazy is it as former players looking back at all the signing day stuff, you know, how the early signing period, the coaching carousel, does that stuff shock you guys or just kind of the business of football?
I think it's just the business of football. I personally think it's a little weird that coaches can get up and leave whenever they want and can coach at the next school, but players can't. That's for a whole different discussion. But you know, I don't know, man. Players are going to go where they want to play at, obviously. I just feel like guys right now are running from competition, man. And I feel like what we're getting in right now is a lot of guys that want to compete, man. So I'm excited for that, man. The coaching carousel, man, is, you know, it's everywhere. I'm glad those guys didn't choose Miami, because it'd have been looking crazy for them down there. But I think they really bought in what I was telling them, man. And I didn't, you know, with me going to school and telling them, hey, man, you know, you should get your degree while I'm actually currently doing it, you know, kind of helped too, man. And just, you know, they get to see like guys who like Pounce. You know, I think Pounce went back and finished. Both of them went back and finished. I think Rainey finished, you know. So a lot of the guys that from Lakeland actually play football. Yes, some of them are still playing, but ultimately we all got our degree too.
That's more impactful than anything Dan Mullen, Nick Savage, anyone could have told them. Is someone like you from their city went to their – sat in the same high school classroom and went to that school and went through it all. That's so much more impactful than any coach could tell them. Just, hey, I've been you. I've been through this walk. I've done this before, and I'm going to tell you exactly what it's like for me and what it would be like for you.
And not only that, to think about the fact that you can sit there and tell them, like, I went on and played past college – and then went back and got it done, and they still accepted me like it was the day I walked off campus to go pursue my dream. That's even more impactful. And I think, you know, obviously, me and Ahmad, you know the same people they know. Y'all grew up in the same town. Like, your family knows the same families that they relate to and they know. So, like, that's the kind of stuff that, like, a Miami coach coming in trying to relate to those guys can't necessarily pull that conversation off. It's just something that's, you know, special. It's something you guys can always, obviously, you know, talk to each other about. Now you get a chance to watch those guys do the same thing y'all did 10 years ago, and you get to sit there and be a fan of it. And not only that, you get to mentor them to a certain degree when you see them.
All right, Sil, you get to have some fun with this one, man. I think we definitely got to discuss what Florida was able to do while FSU and Miami for falling behind on the trail, falling behind on the field as well. You know, you've been letting the trolls get off here for a good few weeks now. And I got some numbers here for that. I kind of, you know, look at the top of classes, kind of what you do. And you're looking at the top, you know, in the FSU's top five players, you're led by Akeem Dent, rank in the range of 50 to 202. The Gators basically have 8 players ranked in the top 150, with DeJuan Black being ranked at 151. So I threw him in the top 150. So, you know, FSU's top five players from 50 to 202, and Florida has 8 players in the top 150. So FSU's 8th ranked player is ranked 265. Miami's very similar to FSU's. Their top five ranges from spots 54 to 210. So, you know, FSU and Miami's 5th ranked player are close to each other at 202 and 210, while Florida's 5th ranked player is Keon Zipperer at 104. So, you know, while I mentioned you had Florida's top 8 signees ranking the top 150, Miami's 8th ranked player is at 441. So it's the top end talent still going, kind of going back to what you were talking about, you know, getting the five stars, you know, getting the top end guys. Florida did that at a much better rate than what FSU and Miami did. And especially when you look at the classes as a whole, it's not even close.
And I'm a firm believer that it starts up front in the trenches, man. And with guys like, we flipped two Miami offensive linemen that hurt them, help us. They didn't really recover from that on the trail. Florida State's offensive line recruiting is pretty much a bunch of projects. Nothing that's going to come in and fix their problem next year. And I don't think they got that, no real good developmental guys, to be honest with you. So I think we out-recruited them up front. And if you look at Florida State playmakers, they didn't get any. They have Maurice Goolsbee, the only skilled player that they signed on offense. No running back. Again, no quarterback. No wide receiver. No tight end.
Yeah, but they did. But they did. So they did get Nick Cross, though. Did I miss something on Twitter?
Cross it off.
I missed it on Twitter today.
Yeah, you missed it. Big day.
They missed on Nick Cross. Are you kidding me?
I heard
it. I mean, most of
I'm just kidding. I got to go get a drink on that one.
Most of the recruits that are good are all defensive backs. We've seen those type of classes. Muschamp had those. A defensive back, top-loaded class that kind of fluffed the class up. It may look okay when you look at it on paper, but when you get down to the nuts and bolts of that Florida State class, it's in shambles. Miami tried to make it up a little bit with the transfer portal, but both of those programs were set back a bit this year.
Yeah, Graham and Nick, I think that's what is one big takeaway I take out of it. Florida widened the gap on the field, and we saw it firsthand, 41-14 when they played FSU. And, you know, if you believe in some of the recruiting rankings and what you see there, the gap just got even wider.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's absolutely a positive for Florida that I don't think many people foresaw. I mean, this time last year, many people were talking about Dan Mullen and Willie Taggart having these epic recruiting battles and them trying to compete with Miami, who just had a 10-win season and finished, you know, in the midst of a 4-game losing streak, sure, but with a lot of promise. Heading into that matchup against LSU. So, I mean, it just goes to show how much college football really is a yearly cyclical in and out business. It's crazy that coaches are still getting these 4 or 5 year contracts, knowing that most guys are going to be up on the block, unless they're a legend in the business, are going to be up there for review every single year. And then you have a situation right now at Florida State where the guy, Willie Taggart, is not only battling everything that he's battling, they're bringing in a new athletic director who didn't decide to hire him, which, as Florida fans know, with Scott Strickland and Jim McElwain, they you know, may only give you 6 months. Scott Strickland ended up extending Jim McElwain back in that July before canning him then in October. So it's really a situation to watch at Florida State because it could really get worse before it does get better.
Well, just to clarify on the extension, though, that was kind of already in the works before Strickland took over, so it wasn't necessarily a thing where he got on board and was like, okay, here's your extension. That was mostly just rubber stamping from him.
Slander from Graham.
Scott just texted you $50.
He's enjoying that new softball stadium right now.
Him on the Cash App. I think piggybacking off what Silk said a little bit, it's not just – like what a Muschamp class would do, or like he says, what Willie did, where you're loading up on the position. I mean, if you look through this class, you've got 5 offensive linemen that you really needed, 4 wide receivers. That position's, loaded right now. So there's talent, but there's also depth in positions that they needed, and I think that's crucial. We hit on it earlier with Muschamp not signing enough offensive linemen. And really just one bad class, and your numbers are skewed, and then you have to start doubling up on next class, and then you don't get extra spots each year. Oh, well, sorry, you didn't sign enough defensive tackles, so we'll give you a couple extra scholarships for next year. It affects everything. And I think you're going to see that with Florida State not signing a quarterback, because that happened with Florida. You had a quarterback class where you didn't get anyone. Then you get Jeff and Jacoby, and then somebody transfers, and now your numbers are off, and you have to try to get 2 quarterbacks in the class again. And what Ahmad said earlier, with kids not wanting to compete, especially at that quarterback position, if they're not getting snaps, not getting the ball, they're gone. So you get behind the eight ball really quick, and I see the way that they're constructing these classes. They're trying to avoid that, and they're doing a good job of that right now.
I just think college football, especially when you look in the state of Florida, tends to be pretty cyclical. I mean, look at Florida when Urban was around, and you know, Florida State pretty much got dominated. Miami wasn't really in the picture. That obviously turned around. Florida State got things rolling, and Florida kind of struggled. I think the one thing you can say right now when you look at those three programs is that there's probably only one of them that you can say is really stable right now, and that's Florida. And I think that helps a ton when you're talking about recruiting from the same pool of kids for the most part between these three big schools. I think Dan Mullen, you know, his roots to Florida in his previous time there has really helped with that. He's been able to kind of get that message to resonate and then, you know, competing for championships. But anytime you have, you know, Florida State and Miami both struggling a little bit, there's an opportunity to be had. And I think there's no doubt that Dan Mullen senses that. And I think that Florida so far has done a pretty good job of capitalizing on that.
Hey, Tate Namad, I get your thoughts on here. You know, the way Florida dominated Florida State on the field, kind of going back to Thomas's point here, and you know that there, you're opening up with Miami next year. From you guys that are in it, I'm sure you talk to the players that are on the field. You know, all that you see them around. You know, players from Miami, players from FSU. Like, how much do you guys, when back your days when you were playing, how much does it mean? Did it all come together? Did you hear of when you beat those guys? Is there some type of effect there? You know, personally.
Me personally. People could talk about Miami all they want. They could talk about the 7-game win streak. Last time I put
you ain't never lost to him.
I ain't never lost to him. I don't know what they're talking about. But give credit where credit's due. Coach Mullen he's doing a phenomenal job in Florida and recruiting. But man, you gotta think about it. You know, all these guys know each other. Now what they're doing now is playing these 7-on-7 and these camps, and they're getting to know each other. From different areas, you know, from Central Florida, meeting up with the South Florida guys and stuff like that. It's all word of mouth sometime, man. And you meet a guy that's in the class above you that just got recruited and signed with Florida, man. First thing I'm gonna ask you is, how is it? I want to know about what Florida, you know, are they really what they're talking about? Are they really about to go out here and win some games? Is the environment just how, you know, Coach Dan Mullen, you know, comes to my house and says it is? I think that plays a big part in it as well. You know, not taking anything from Coach Mullen and those guys, but you know, ultimately, you know, DeJuan Black is doing the MVP job on Twitter.
Yeah, I
love him on Twitter.
Yeah, you know? And we see that with the 2020 kids. They got, you know, some kind of competition, competitive spirit going on with who can bring in the big recruits, who can bring in the big stars. And I'm sure when you guys were there, when Florida was bringing in the 4 stars and 5 stars time and time again.
That's the key thing. And then I was about to just say, like Ahmad, I think, hit it on the head there. The biggest thing that we used to do as players when Urban came in, and he had his core, like, you know, 5-6 guys on the team that he really, really entrusted with the recruits that he needed to land to come in. And then, like, Todd McCullough, Brandon Seiler, myself, and a few others were those – you know, 10 guys that they would trust bringing some of these heavy recruits in. And it's really about their visit on campus, but it's about the conversations with the players. It's all about what the mindset of the team was. And I tell you, the one thing that really started shifting in that mindset and how we used to recruit guys, when I'm talking to a high school guy that was hanging out with, you know, the team and we're out and about or whatever, the biggest thing was, listen, man, you can go anywhere and play. You can go anywhere and try and be a stud. Like, what it is here is not what it is down the road. And what it is here is not what it is in Georgia and Tallahassee and all these other places. Is you're going to come here and it's hard. And I'm going to be the first person to tell you, because, like, I'm going to tell you that because we don't want soft people here. Like, we're trying to win championships, and that's what the mindset is. We were, like, so tired of being 8-4, 7-5. We wanted something different. And the biggest thing is the 05 offseason, I think, really put some grit and some chip on some people's shoulders. And we turned the corner into 06, and we had the mindset all the way across the board. And so even those younger guys who finally got that ironed into them as freshmen, when they became sophomores, they did the same thing. And when Ahmad and them came in 07, they did the same thing. And then you started seeing those 4-star, 5-star recruits that came in, and they would preach that same thing down when they were recruiting guys, when guys were on campus, the way we competed day in, day out. It didn't matter what you were doing. Everybody was trying to win. And so I think that's the big thing, is that mindset. And Nick Savage embodies that in the offseason, which is what Mick Marotti did so well when he was here and under Coach Mullen, I mean, Coach Meyer. That was what won us games. We won it from January to August. We dumped all of that in the bank You know, we dumped it in the bank every single day of practice, and we left everything we had in the preparation. And by the time game came around, you're at the ATM. It's already in the bank, man. You're just making withdrawals. At that point, you're just spending, and that's it.
Make it rain, Tate.
That's it.
Hey, Irby used to always say, make the games easier than practice.
Always. You know?
And I it's plenty of times when I just remember looking across on our offense and you got, you know, Tate and, you know, Hernandez, and you got, you know, Rainey and, or Demps in the backfield, and you got Percy, Riley, and Lewis Murphy out there, you know. All right, you have no choice but to get better when you're going against Joe Hayden and Janoris Jenkins and Spikes in the middle, and then Will Hill at nickel, and then Major at safety, and then I'm at the other safety.
Especially when nobody's given an inch.
That's
right. Like ball. Nobody's given and an inch. Like Reggie Nelson.
We're getting that back around here.
Reggie Nelson made a man out of me, you know, like in practice, like going one on one with a tight end. And I thought I could, you know, big body and run with some of these smaller guys. But there's guys like Reggie that could cover, you know, 45 yards just with a ball in the air. Those kind of things in the practice moments was dudes getting knocked out, dudes taking chin shots. Guys that didn't care about your feelings because everybody's trying to see the field. But not only that, everybody's trying to win. And it wasn't that we were trying to win in the football season. We were, but we knew if you win every single rep, every single day in practice, there's a winner and a loser. And that's what Dan Mullen's trying to get across right now. And Nick Savage is enforcing that. And I think as long as the coaching and development's there and that mindset is taking place, the rest will fall into place. The biggest thing is, can the players show up and make sure that they're ready every single day to take that approach?
By the way, Tate, you said winner or loser, right?
And so, you know, 7-on-7. Yeah, we used to tear y'all.
Hey, man, y'all boys get a room, bro. Get a room.
Then that people run the ball. You know that.
That tough love talk kind of gets me where I wanted to go next. And it was a big topic last time we talked, and it was this staff and how would they recruit. Before, you know, this was before the season even started. And yeah, look, it was a big topic. And John Hevesy, his tough love approach, and you end up going out there and getting 7 offensive linemen. And, you know, there was some criticism of him, but, you know, maybe not so warranted now with what he was able to do in bringing all those offensive line in, you know. But now after a 10-win season, you know, we saw just how important that familiarity was with the staff. And after a top 10 class, you know, there's not much really to criticize as far as staff goes. Changes happened with Sinceri and Warren leaving. There was some criticism of Sinceri. Warren was a key cog in the Elam recruitment, but turns out it wasn't necessarily a staple in his recruitment. So when it was all said and done, and as far as the staff goes, I don't think the worry that some had going into the season when recruiting wasn't going so well, that worry about the staff isn't so much there now, especially when you kind of fast forward and look at the 2020 class as well and the fast start they're off to.
My worry is going to be there until we address defensive tackle and strong side defensive end. The only gripe I had with the last staff was Sal, and Sal's gone, so I don't know who to be mad at right now. besides, I guess, the top. Hevesy was my worry. I would say when they first got the staff together, I would say Hevesy and C-Rob was my worries on the staff. Both of those guys have done pretty damn good, man. But we got to see what David Turner do with defensive line. I think with Sal Sinceri's uncertainty as far as him being on the staff or still with Florida or even coaching still, that kind of hurt us on the trail a little bit. Some people use that to negative recruit. But now Sal's gone, so we'll see how we can do this next cycle. And going to this next cycle, we got guys – it's been a long time since we had guys committed. We're top 5 class right now. We got guys committed going to all these camps, man. Gator jumping and talking trash for the Gators. It's been a long time since that happened. We usually go into the summer trying to find a guy.
I love that guys are going to camps and putting on for the Gators, man. And you know, I see guys in there saying, you know, from other schools, like, hey, you know, we should get this guy. And those guys tweeting back saying, nah, I'm a Gator. And that's what we need, man. We don't need part-time Gators, man. We need guys that's going to go to these camps, going to show what they got, show their ability, show the reason why they should be a Gator, and bring those top guys on board.
Yeah, I've kind of said this since Dan took over, and really even his first couple weeks when he was going out talking to fans and everything. The thing that stuck out to me is just it feels very natural. It feels so organic. Like, you know, I mean, there was this whole thing about Jim McElwain that just if everything felt forced. You know, it didn't click the way it should have. And I think Dan is just, he is Florida to some, you know, to some degree. And I think that to me is what's really standing out, especially in the recruiting process, is you can almost feel the momentum starting to build again. And it gets back to the Landon, the Lakeland kids and stuff like that. Like you said, these kids going out and recruiting for Florida when they're out there at camps, it just feels so organic. And I think it's a tough thing to maybe put words on as to what that phenomenon is. But I feel like Florida's heading in the right direction with all these things we talk about, you know, rounding out the defensive tackle class, you know, getting some of those elite five-star prospects. I feel like that's all kind of just building that direction with everything that Florida's built so far. And I think, you know, you can talk about individual assistants all day and all that, but I think really, you know, the vision for the program that Dan Mullen came in with, you're starting to realize it, you're starting to see it. And I think that ultimately is going to pay off in recruiting. So, you know, if you're asking me right now, I don't have a whole lot of concerns about Dan Mullen and his staff. Sure, it could be a little bit better. It always can. It's never as good as it looks. But things just feel like they're headed in the right direction for Florida right now.
Yeah, you also got to think, we've been through this before with you know, even when the program was in championship status back in, you know, 06, 07, 08, with coaching change and finding guys to fill voids, right? When Greg Madison departed and you bring in Dan McCarney and picked up right where we left off on the defensive side of the football, we've had, you know, assistant running backs coaches with Stan Drayden and some change there. And we've had those small things that you think maybe, you know, affects recruiting, it affects this. The biggest thing here is, it's a trickle down from Dan Mullen, right? And as long as he goes and identifies what, you know, what he needs on the coaching staff to help him accomplish what his goals are and you know, who fits the mold of what he wants, you know, associated with that position group or with the, you know, offense or defense or whatever it may be, I don't think it matters. You go find you a qualified coach. It's Florida. You slide a check out there that makes sense for the person you're trying to get, and you get them on board. I think, if anything, most coaches that are looking for a step up or even a lateral move in certain instances, it's a good stepping stone to a head coaching job or to, you know, higher things. And that's always been the thing, even under Urban, when you look at, you know, I mean, hell, you can look at Mike Locksley right now, who's the head coach at Maryland and has worked his way head coaching from Florida, you know, and other places. But you can look at Urban's tree. Coaching tree has really pumped on to a lot of head coaches right now. From that staff, 06, 07, 08, there's a lot of benefit there. So I'm not necessarily worried about the recruiting impact here and there. I think we've got a lot unknown right now with Grantham possibly looking at entertaining an NFL position, and what's to happen between now and next season. There's a lot there. But I have no doubt in my mind that Scott Strickland and Dan Mullen are going to be on the same page about exactly what needs to come in if that does happen and how it fits the mold of where we're going as a program.
Hi, Graham.
Yeah, obviously building off a lot of what you guys have said, Dan Mullen was first and foremost the lead recruiter for a lot of guys. I mean, I think if anything, the last month validated that anyone thinking that Charlton Warren was going to be a package deal for Kyir Elam was, you know, woefully misinformed, probably none more so than Warren himself. You know, Florida landed a top 50 guy with a new guy in Torian Gray, who, yeah, had some connections, a little bit distant connections to the Elam family, but it just showed that Mullen was the biggest factor in his recruitment. And then the same thing with Chris Bogle. David Turner, like you guys have said, that's a big question mark for me. I know his relationship, to Florida is huge for sure, but he has a huge task, and that's developing a defensive tackle and ends of the future. And we haven't seen for sure that he's still capable of doing that. And I do think ultimately it will turn out, but that is a huge task at hand. I don't think you can underplay, you know, especially if they lose Grantham here in the next few days. We could be having a totally different conversation here next week, depending on what the staff looks like next week. And that would make Turner's job even more important. So it could get worse before it gets better for Florida right now. But I trust Dan Mullen. I think that, you know, in the recruiting, what he did on the recruiting trail for the last year pretty much confirmed that the assistants may change. But as long as he's there, he's going to get kids to buy in pretty easily if he wants them.
Nick, what you got for kind of moving forward for recruiting and what it holds for the Gators?
Well, I think disagree a little bit with Silk. I mean, I don't know what Sal was as a recruiter, but I don't know how you replaced him as far as, you know, a technician teaching. We'll see.
We were just talking recruiting, bro.
Yeah, just talking recruiting. But Torian Gray, I love him. I think it speaks to his relationship with the players that before he was even contacted or maybe even on Mullen's radar, he's got, you know, Marco Wilson, who he didn't even coach. He just recruited him, texting him and saying, hey, we want you back. And Juwan Taylor texting him saying, hey, we want you back. So I think he's going to be great on the trail. Ahmad in our little chat over here mentioned he's a Lakeland guy. I think there's a running back down there that Florida might want to bring to Gainesville next year. So I think recruiting wise, like Silk, I didn't know what C-Rob was going to be. I thought it would be interesting because he's so young, played under Grantham. So he has an intimate knowledge of the defense and with his age and that knowledge, be able to translate to recruits. We've seen that. Absolutely. It has. So to me, I think they're in a good place. I think they're in a good place. And like Silk said earlier, is that you've got an established group of kids right now that are already committed to you. And Ahmad said that, you know, they're repping and banging for Florida on Twitter. And then they're going to these camps and they're bringing kids in, and kids want to play with, they want to go and win. They want to play with good kids. So when you get out to, you know, a 7-on-7 camp and you've got four guys on one team that are committed to Florida and they're talking about it. And then their team goes out and wins that tournament. Hey, maybe I want to go play with him. Brandon Spike saying, you know, back in, what was it, 06, hey, wherever Tim Tebow goes, that's where I'm going. Like, he can go to FIU, and I'll go to FIU with him. It doesn't matter. So kids want to play with talent, and they want to win games. So I think that will be something interesting to follow, and I think that's going to help Florida in this class.
Hey, I agree with you, but I say this. Brandon Spice was not going to FIU.
I'm not buying that. Westbrook.
That's exactly right. Hey, I hate to bail out on you boys. I'll see y'all next time. I got a jet. So, Dave, I appreciate it, man. I told you I had to bail out early. I just wanted to
make sure. Oh, yeah, we'll do the dishes, bro. Just go do the dishes.
I don't know why he's trying to act like
that. I'm going to promise you, it ain't like that around here, boss.
Man, you better get the dishes done, bro.
My girl make me wash the dishes every day, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Nah, Ahmad, stop trying to roll me into that.
Just I leave what she embarrassed you in front of your friends, bro.
Hate only talking like that because he knows his wife's not watching this.
You're gonna be upset when she listens to it. All right.
Yeah.
That's it. Yep, you're right. She'll probably smack me around a little bit. I'd be the first one to.
Yeah, Tay. We don't live too far from each other. So when we hang out, I'll let my wife talk to your wife about washing some dishes. And
there you go. All right, boy. We'll see you later, man.
See ya. All right, we'll be wrapping it up soon here too. But any final thoughts from you guys before we wrap this one up? But I think did a pretty good job here wrapping up recruiting and spring. Spring football not too far, and it's starting. Spring game's been announced April 13th, 1 o'clock, right? So,
I had a question for you and Silk, really, because I think when we did our recruiting preseason recruiting, and everyone was not just you guys, but everyone was kind of like, "Why are they spending so much time in California and this and that?"
Yeah.
Just wanted your opinion on kind of the way things shook out with the class, and do you still have that same opinion where they don't need to be wasting time in California? What is your opinion on? Because, I mean, you're the University of Florida. You need to recruit the entire country. I don't think you're wasting time by offering kids or visiting kids in California.
Yeah, I think we should stay out of California. I just want to invest a lot of time out there. There's just so much talent in the Southeast. We don't have to be out there wasting resources. I mean, if you spot pick some guy, I'm not going
to
say.
It's easy to spend someone else's money. Don't worry about that.
I'm just saying we banked our first early portion of our class on California. We can't do that part. Now, if there's some elite talent in California, of course, go out there, players everywhere, but we can't be banging on 5-6 kids from California, bro. Like, that's too much. But,
yeah, that was a big part of the last pod when we discussed it. It was the first recruiting panel. And yeah, that was a big part of it because we were really just coming off of it. Chris Steele had basically, I think, had already committed to USC by then. So it really did look like a big failure at the time. And is it? I mean, do you really consider
one guy?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Do you really consider it, even though he's one of the top players and one of the best players in the class, was it really still considered a success? Probably not. I mean, I'm glad you got him. Don't get me wrong. I'd rather have him than not have him. But we already see how excited fans are, how the start for 2020, and that 2020 class is based on a lot of these top Florida guys that they're going after, and the potential of the 2020 class is based off of getting Bowman out of Lakeland and Beck out of here in Jacksonville and getting guys out of Florida again. So yeah, Like I said, go cherry pick when there, yeah. But I don't like spending.
Well, I think they were coming in. I think the first year, they were coming in a little behind relationship wise with a lot of the Florida kids. So I think they kind of used English relationships out in California and guys' relationships in other places kind of helped them get through the first year. But I don't think they're banking on California going forward like that.
I just don't feel like we should be going way up. I mean, we passing over, Texas and a lot of good other places. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of don't get me wrong. There's some talent in California, but I just feel like we passing over a lot.
We can hang out in the Southeast, bro.
Yeah, you know give me Florida, Georgia, sprinkle in some North Carolina. I'm good. I can win that
one. I like the DMV. Yeah, give me some DMV areas.
You got to get some 301 a little bit in there. Get some 301. But, you know, other than that, man, I like to keep it Southeast because, man, you go up. Anything past that, they don't really play football anyway. They play basketball, so.
Just facts.
Honestly.
Thomas Graham, any final thoughts from you guys?
No, I really like the momentum that Florida's building. You know, it maybe doesn't always show up on paper. Like we talked about the slow start and all that. I just think the Florida program is in a really good spot right now. I mean, it just really feels like they're, building the foundation, I guess you'd say, for something special. We talked about all the points, man. I don't need to say it again. I think that the way that Dan Mullen has gone about building things, and I think Tate mentioned trickle down from him, I just think there's a very clear vision in place right now, and I think you're going to continue to see the results pay off.
Yeah, and I like pretty much what everyone says. I think the biggest thing, though, and Dan Mullen has shown no, you know, inclination of doing this, they just have to make sure that they don't really, you know, get complacent on the recruiting trail. This is a time where you have a lot of unique circumstances, Florida State, Miami being down, you have the pick of quarterback, you know, they really need to kind of, you know, get ruthless and cut some kids and pick who you want. And this is the opportunity to do it because, you know, only one of these opportunities can come around maybe once a decade if you're lucky in a program, and Florida has a chance to really widen that gap right now. And we're going to see how Dan Mullen capitalizes on this.
Yeah, that was probably one of the only critiques of this class is, look, you were ninth in the country, but fifth in the SEC. So you still have your work cut out for you when you're going to Alabama, Georgia, A&M, LSU, LSU and Georgia on the schedule every year. So they're recruiting talent about on the same pace as you are right now. So, you know, you're really going to have to, and a lot of people believe it, and I'm a firm believer of it too. Mullen gets the best out of his guys. He's going to continue get the best out of his guys, but also start getting that 4-star, 5-star talent going in.
Yeah, we pulling up. Yeah, we pulling up in 2020, Dave.
There we go.
We getting some big talent in 2020, man.
Closing the gap for sure.
5-star stuff, man. Yeah,
I'm just so excited. I 2019 barely got over, and we are. And as soon as 2019 signing day was over, I'm ready to hop into 2020. I want the signing day to be back to back days because I'm ready. Shoot,
it's been a long time since we enjoyed this.
One more thought to close the show on that. How hard was it to see what Florida was going through with Will Muschamp, Jim McElwain, and then bringing in a guy you're familiar with, even though of course the other side of the ball.
I'm a firm believer, you know, I can't talk bad about a person that I hear, but man, it was just so hard that this man just, you know,
open and close your mouth and we'll have silk talk. You're not saying
I'll make it happen.
It was just so hard, man. Just, you know, I'm so used to coming back to the games and coming out of the south end zone with the guys and Mullen embracing us. And that's how it should be. We shouldn't have to come to the game and sit in the north end zone. Like, you, no disrespect, you just came from Colorado State and you're going to tell your Gator Grace to sit in the north end zone?
It is.
That's almost a slap in the face, but.
Well, hey, one of the best highlights after the pick six against LSU was – you guys celebrating with Brad Stewart and everybody. I mean, yeah.
I can't wait, because I'm making a couple more appearances this year. I cannot wait.
All right. Sounds good. That'll do it for this edition of the panel. Hey, Silk, man, thanks so much for helping me put this thing together. I think I did another good job. Thank you gentlemen for joining us here again. I think the Gator Nation gets a whole lot out of it. And maybe somewhere around the spring, we'll do another one. We'll get
spring. Out the spring.
After spring.
Live until. Yeah, absolutely.
There we go. After spring.
Man, hopefully you guys invite me again, man. It's truly.
We hanging out every time, Black.
Man, holla at me, man. I just like to hang out.
We got national championship lives after the spring game.
I swear to God, if y'all invite me the next time, I'm going to have all my rings on. I'm going to be sitting here like.
There we go.
I'm going to wear my wedding ring, bro.
I might have one by then, too, but you don't quote me, all right?
Oh, I need an invite to the wedding, bro.
There's the tease.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of the Gator Panel. Gator Nation, thanks for joining us here, and we'll see you guys later.